Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
I got a fever, and the only prescription is more Patrick Madrid.
Compelling Come on! Insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back again. Thank you for listening to the program. Please note that we are rapidly approaching the end of Holy Week with the culmination of Easter coming up. There's still time for you to stay close to Jesus to the last. 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. Central every day, Father Rocky pauses at those times to delve into the events of Jesus' last days before his passion. So if you'd like to really intensify your Lenten preparation for Easter, you can do it. Go to relevantradio.com or use the Relevant Radio app to get a complete list of all of our Holy Week programming. But it includes Mass, the Easter Vigil Mass from the Vatican with the Pope at 12:30 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio. That'll be on Holy Saturday. Also, you can do Stations of the Cross twice tomorrow if you wish. At noon Central with Bishop Robert McClory. That'll be from the Shrine of Christ's Passion in St. John, Indiana. And then at 3 p.m. Central with Father Rocky at the Chapel of the Nativity in Green Bay. And it's all spelled out on the app, or you can get it by going to relevantradio.com. Click on the banner, 888-914-9149. Cyrus, this is curious, because, I mean, you've heard that women can become men, and men can become women, right? You've heard that.
I've Googled, can a man become pregnant, and Google told me yes. That's how far
pregnant
we've
persons
come or fallen. I'm not sure.
Pregnant persons. That's another one. Well, this is just kind of odd. Tell me what you think of this. This is from the Daily Mail. Two women at New Jersey's women's only prison. They're pregnant. And
I must have misheard you. Can you please?
I'm just going to read into the article here. So the pregnant women who are not identified are housed at the Edna Mahan Correctional Facility in Clinton, and this is in New Jersey. And there are transgender prisoners there. So they call them transgender women. But, you know, and I know that they were men who somehow magically became women. And these 27, I'm just trying to piece this together. 27 of these now women prisoners are in with a total of about 800 other women. And two of them are now pregnant.
What you talking about, Willis?
How does that happen? Because I thought they were now women. So something's not right at the Edna Mahan Correctional Facility in Clinton, New Jersey. Somebody goofed.
Yeah, can you explain this to me?
Yeah.
Like the vice president explains important global.
You mean like Ukraine is a country in Europe? That like that?
Mm-hmm. And how Russia is a bigger country
next to that country?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
can you explain it to me like that?
Okay, these women, they're women in jail, and there are 27 other women who are not really women. Oh, I get it. It just dawned on me what happened. Now I get it. They're really still men.
Oh, well, that makes perfect sense.
That's the explanation.
Oh, it was right there. It was right there.
He's staring me in the face the whole time.
Oh, who knew?
Well, problem solved. So does that mean that they will say, oops, we made a mistake. Now we need to... I don't think they're going to do that. So this story may repeat itself. We'll see what happens.
Wow.
Yeah. Elon Musk, let's talk about him for a minute. I love this story. The more the story goes, the bigger it gets, the more I love it. Elon Musk, that guy, you know who I'm talking about. The Tesla Elon Musk. I bet he was the only kid in his fifth grade class with the first name Elon. I wonder how many children... I wonder if Elon's going to become a popular name for boys. He's the richest man in the world, and he already bought just under 10% of Twitter. And yesterday, he made an offer to buy all of Twitter, 100% of Twitter, and his offer was $54.20 per share. I looked it up this morning when I was looking at this article, and Twitter, as when I was looking at it, they were trading at about $48 a share. So it's a significant bump, and he's saying that's his only offer. It's his final offer, and the Twitter employees are freaking out. They are beside themselves. They're worried about this. There are people on Twitter who are free. And what I love about Elon Musk is that he trolls Twitter on Twitter. And they can't kick him off because he owns 10% of the company. And to make it even better, or as Jackie Gleason would say, how sweet it is. They can't kick him off Twitter because he's an owner. He's a majority owner. But also, they offered him a position on the board of directors when he bought the 9.5% or 9.4% that he bought just last week. And it was a maneuver because if he had accepted the offer and gone on the board, then it would have placed restrictions. Among other restrictions, would have been that he could only own a maximum of 15% of the company, but he wants the whole enchilada. And so he declined the offer. I think at first he said, sure, I'll be on the board. And then maybe he was just toying with them, but he said, no, I'm not going to be on the board, because not only does that mean that there are no restrictions for him to only be allowed to buy a certain amount of the company, but also there's no restrictions on him about what he can say about the company on Twitter.
Interesting.
Guy's like a three-dimensional chess player.
Yeah, and by him saying he's going to be on the board and then not being on the board, the stock tanked. So it brought the stock down. So I don't know where it was. I don't know if it was over that $52 mark.
Here's what he said. It did go up. You know, it's somewhat, you know, it bounces up and down. He says, I invested in Twitter. This is what he told Brett Taylor, the chairman of the board of Twitter. He says, I invested in Twitter as I believe in its potential to be the platform for free speech around the globe. And I believe free speech is a societal imperative for a functioning democracy. Do you know, you notice that he says that Twitter has potential to be a platform for free speech? That's what's irking them so badly, is they think that Twitter already is that. Of course, if they don't like something that you or I say, they'll close us down. Elon Musk says, however, since making my investment, I now realize the company will neither thrive nor serve the societal imperative until it's or in its current form. Twitter needs to be transformed as a private company. As a result, I am offering to buy 100% of Twitter for $54.20 per share in cash, a 54% premium over the day before I began investing in Twitter, and a 38% premium over the day before my investment was publicly announced. My offer is my best and final offer, and if it is not accepted, I would need to reconsider my position as a shareholder. And then he finishes with this. Twitter has extraordinary potential. I will unlock it.
That's almost ingenious right there.
Yes. And for all those, you know, sour grapes people who send me nasty grams about, why do you stay on Twitter? Why don't you get off Twitter? This is one reason why. There's hope for Twitter. And I can only imagine what Twitter would look like. You could breathe free.
How does the radical left feel about this?
They're furious. They're angry. And you know one reason why? They are really angry. They're angry. And they're angry for a couple reasons. One is I think he's outmaneuvered them, because as I read such things, and the, you know, the financial gurus could correct me if I'm wrong on this, but as I read this, they realize that if they don't take this offer, which represents a significant profit, and there are going to be some, you know, some new multimillionaires and maybe even a few billionaires tucked in there, people who would stand to benefit. The company would stand to benefit. The employees would stand to benefit, although you'd probably see a great exodus of companies. Hey, maybe they can go work for the Donald Trump new app. You know, I understand that he's got a new app. Maybe they can go work for him. But in any case, I think that he's outmaneuvered them, because if he were to walk away from it and sell his 9.4% stake in the company, it could implode. It could have a real decrease in stock. Then all of them lose. So they're between a rock and a hard place. Do we give the keys to Elon Musk, who's going to unlock the potential and make this thing an actually free public platform? Or do we cut off our noses to spite our faces and say, no, you know, we're not going to take your offer. And then the company tanks and we all lose a huge amount of money.
Is this a hostile takeover?
I think so.
Wow.
I mean, he's not friendly to what Twitter does. I mean, the antics, you know, that Twitter engages in all the time. He's not friendly to it. So he's telling him, if I buy this, I'm going to change it. You can't survive it. You can't do what you really are called to do the way you are now. But if I buy it, I'm going to fix it. And Twitter can become what it really should be and what it should have been all along if it weren't in the clutches of the far left. And that's what scares him. And I think that's what wow. angers him so much, because he has moved the market on this issue so much so that if he says, okay, fine, this is my one and only offer. If you don't want it, that's okay. I've still got many hundreds of billions of dollars and you don't, so I'll be fine. But if you don't want my offer and I walk away from it and I pull out the nearly 10% that I just purchased for the company, what do you think that's going to do to the stocks? They're going to tank. And so they have to, you know, could you imagine if so much of your personal fortune, on paper at least, depended upon your stock ownership, if you're, you know, somebody in Twitter, somebody working in Twitter or on the board of Twitter, and you realize that if you take the deal and hand him the keys, Twitter becomes something that's not far left and repressive the way it is now. So that's the trade-off. And you make a lot of money. You know, your bottom line might rise by millions of dollars overnight if you sell. Or if you don't sell, you have the satisfaction, I guess, of saying, well, we showed him, didn't we? We're going to keep on doing what we do. And then you lose a lot of money. That's what it looks like to me.
This is interesting, because I like that Twitter has problems, and I like that someone can come in and make changes like this. But it's also worrisome that there could be a company that is taken over by a trillionaire at a moment's
notice.
He's
not there yet.
No, he's not?
He's moving there.
Oh, okay.
No, I think he's around 260
oh.
billion.
Oh, I'm a ways off. That's a ways off then.
He's moving there, though. He'll be there soon enough.
But anyway, it's still, I mean, it's the same. Once you get into that stratosphere of money, what difference does it make? So, do you see what I mean? As Twitter has problems with censorship, and they're just constantly wrong on what they're taking down. But at the same time, is it good that this billionaire can?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Here's why. Because love it or hate it, Twitter is here. You can love it, you can hate it. It doesn't really matter. It's kind of like TV. It's kind of like the network news. It's kind of like, just pick any big thing like that. It's here. It can be used for good. It can be used in the way it is now to be repressive and to stifle free speech and to shut out of the national conversation people that the Poindexters who are writing the code for Twitter, if they don't like what you have to say, they'll just simply exclude you from the national conversation or not let you post things, etc. We all know that that's happening. It's, you know, they're not even hiding it. It's
right.
Very blatant.
Yeah.
So yeah, if Elon Musk, and I don't know much about him. I'd like to read a biography about this guy. I'm not even sure if they've been written yet. I don't know if he's got a religious bone in his body. He may be a rank atheist for all I know, but in a way it almost doesn't matter, because God can use people like Elon Musk to improve things, and, you know, maybe it won't be everything that I would hope for, but it might be a move in the right direction, and I'll settle for that, honestly.
He surprises me with some of the things he says. I mean, he's one of the people that has come out and promoted life and saying we don't have enough people on this planet, which is the exact opposite of what they're teaching my kids in school.
Right.
My son came home and was like, yeah, there's too many people on the planet. We need to stop having babies. And I'm like, wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
That's a false narrative.
You know, did you ask your son, should mom and I not have had you?
I wish I would have. I need you around.
I'm too busy show prepping, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. I see Elon Musk as an enigma, and it's very, in a certain sense, a kind of an appealing enigma, because they can't control him. They can't silence him, because all he'll do is if, hey, Twitter, you want to silence me? Fine. I'm going to buy you. I mean, how do you control somebody like that? You can't. And the fact that he's bucking the system and he's doing these other things. Now, please don't misunderstand. I'm not saying I'm sold out for Elon Musk, because I'm not. And I'm not saying that everything Elon Musk says, I agree. Because I don't know half the things that he believes. I'm interested in finding out more. But when I see things like this, I have a good feeling about that. And it seems like it's trending in a positive direction. We'll see what happens. So who knows? Maybe tomorrow, you know, Elon Musk will have gobbled up Twitter, fixed it, you know, cleaned it up, put it on the right path, allow it to be truly egalitarian and let people actually have a say and not be ruled by the leftist ideology that it's currently ruled by now. And then, you know, maybe go fix Facebook next. You know, he'll be knocking on Mark Zuckerberg's door next. We'll see what happens. He could buy Facebook from Mark Zuckerberg, I think. Well, okay. Break time. I just wanted you all to know about that. And if you're interested in the articles, Cyrus has got a couple. He'll post them on the show Twitter feed. And we'll go back to your phone calls right after this. The number is 888-914-9149. And I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com. Got a little woman, be a woman.
As Dr. Spock would say, Mr. Spock, not Dr. Spock, different guy. Fascinating. Pure energy. 888-914-9149. Let's go
think,
to...
Think this song would be made today?
Let me listen to it a little bit more.
Let a woman be a woman, let a man be a man.
There you go. Let a man... Who is this?
I don't know. A listener. That
sounds a little bit like James Brown a little bit.
It's not. It does sound like James Brown. He even does the ha! Hey!
Maybe he's trying to sound like James Brown.
Right. But it's an awesome song. It's good. A listener gave me a heads up about this, and I was like, oh, this is spot on.
Hey, put that in the list of songs that we go to. Right next to Aretha.
Yes.
Yeah.
And okay, Walk Like a Man.
There are a lot of good songs. We're going to get to some of that stuff here in a minute. First, though, Wayne in Temple City, California, thank you for calling and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Patrick. I was having lunch with two wonderful Catholic friends of mine, and one of them brought up the fact that on the Sunday after Easter, that it's Divine Mercy Sunday, and that a non-Catholic can do confession and also take communion.
No.
And so I wanted you to
not true.
Tell me if that was possible.
No, it's not. Let's start there. So no, that's not possible. In order to go to Holy Communion and to go to the Sacrament of Confession, one must be Catholic. So the door is wide open, and we would welcome with open arms all of our non-Catholic friends to come into the church, but that would be necessary in order to do those things. You can't, we don't give like what's the word? I'm trying to think of the Monopoly game, you know, get out of jail free card, so to speak, where on this one day of the year, even though you can't receive communion any other day of the year, you can this day. That's just not true. Church doesn't say that. But it obviously is an opportunity for people to experience God's mercy, and all non-Catholic folk are welcome to come to Mass. They're welcome to be there with us. We invite them to be with us. But Holy Communion is for those who are prepared for it. And, you know, we would love to help them get prepared for it, but short of that, we would just have to respectfully ask them to maybe come up for a blessing if they want, but at the very least to refrain from going forward to receive Holy Communion because they're not ready for it yet.
Great. Thank you for that. The other friend of mine, he was saying that there's a saint that wrestled the devil and was able to retrieve souls from hell. Is that true?
I don't think so. I mean, there have been saints who have been pummeled by the devil or demons. So St. John Vianney, for example, the curé of Ars, was well known for being attacked physically by demons. St. Anthony of the Desert was attacked by demons back in the 3rd century. St. John Bosco is another one. So there are examples of, I wouldn't call it that they were wrestling with the devil as much as they were being pummeled by the devil. St. Padre Pio had similar experiences. But as far as like, if I can beat you in a wrestling match, devil, you've got to give up 100 souls. No, nothing like that. That's just a folklore.
Yes. Well, thank you for shedding light on that. I will let my friend Jim and Chris know that they need to listen to your program a little longer.
I would love that. Yeah, please invite them for me. And thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Bernice now in Graham, Washington. Hi, Bernice.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Yes. I'm going to just give you the question, and then you can ask if for more information if you need it.
Okay.
Is it a sin to attend another church after I attend Mass first? Like if I attend Mass first and then I have a friend ask me to go to another church?
Well, I don't know that I would say it's a sin, but I would say it's unwise and unnecessary. So you as a Catholic, I mean, unless, let me put it this way. There can be situations where it would be entirely appropriate to do that. So let's say you go to Mass on Sunday, and it so happens that your cousin, who's a Protestant, is getting married at the local Lutheran church, and you're invited to the wedding. Not that they would necessarily get married on a Sunday. Maybe there's a funeral. Maybe there's some other reason that you would have a reason to go and be present at that. That would be fine. The church doesn't say you can't do anything like that. But just to go and double dip, like after you go to Mass, and then you get a heaping helping of Protestant error, I don't think it's wise. It certainly is not helpful to a Catholic to do that. Now, there could be an extenuating circumstance. It could be because the husband is Protestant and the wife is Catholic, or vice versa. And there may be an effort to try to show, you know, mutual love and support. Maybe something like that could be possible. But generally speaking, I don't think it's a good idea.
Okay, and that's the situation. My husband, we just got married in October, and although we did get married in the Catholic Church, he was baptized and received the sacraments. Mm-hmm. He had an experience that wasn't pleasant, and so he is now going to a Pentecostal church, and he likes the I don't know, the holy roller kind of thing, you know, with the raising of the hands and the singing and the praising and worship. We always go to Mass first, and Mass is at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then we go to breakfast, and then afterwards we go to his church. And it's not that I dislike it. It's a little bit more than what I used to. It's mm-hmm. I have to wear earplugs because it's a little loud.
Wow.
But I think what bothers me is that there are times when within the preaching, the preacher says stuff about Catholicism, and I want to stand up and go, excuse me, you're wrong.
Right, right.
And it's difficult for me, and I don't know how to broach that with my husband because I know he really enjoys it.
Mm-hmm. I can understand what you're saying. I really can. In fact, I've talked to many couples over the years who are in a very similar situation. And as you can already see, it's creating a kind of wedge effect, isn't it, in your marriage where you're not comfortable with it. You're doing it, but you're not really, you know, you really don't want to have to go there. And so what right now might be a kind of seemingly small wedge can grow bigger over time because we human beings have a tendency to become resentful. And that can go in both directions. So if you pull back and say, I'm not going to go to your church because I just don't like it and I don't like being, you know, being attacked as a Catholic, your resentment is likely to grow, but so is his, because it may be that after a while he starts resenting the fact that you're not there with him. You know, I go to Mass with you. How come you can't go here with me? Well, one reason, honey, is because when you go to Mass on Sunday, the Catholic priest doesn't attack Protestants. You know, it seems to be a very common thing in the Protestant world, and that is because many of the people who are at those churches are former Catholics, just like your husband. And sometimes the ministers are former Catholics. And keeping in mind that the Protestant Reformation as such, it wasn't a reformation, it was a revolt. But what we think of today as the Protestant Reformation is a protest movement. That is the essence of Protestantism. It's defined more by what it's against than by what it's for. I know that many good-hearted Protestant folks might disagree with me about that, but I believe it's true. The Protestant movement is based in protest. And what are they protesting? The Catholic Church. So let's return, though, if you don't mind, Bernice, to what you said about your husband, because this is the thing that I think needs to be said, and I hate to be the one to have to say it, but it's true, and that is that he has committed a grave sin, a grave sin by leaving the Catholic Church. And I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but sometimes the doctor has to say, well, the tests have come back and you've got cancer. You know, we can help you survive it if you do these things, but if you don't, it's going to kill you. And the doctor has to say that sometimes, as painful as that may be. So if you look at section 14, go online and look at the Vatican II document, Lumen Gentium, L-U-M-E-N, Gentium, G-E-N-T-I-U-M. It means light under the peoples. That's referring to Jesus. Mm-hmm. And it's the dogmatic constitution on the church. But section 14 is where it says, and I'm paraphrasing, but it says it right there in black and white, that Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, faith in him is necessary for salvation. And being a member of the church he established, the Catholic Church, and it says that in black and white, is necessary for salvation. And there are those that it refers to those who may, through no fault of their own, you know, they don't realize that, and God will deal with them in a merciful way, we pray. But it says that anyone who either refuses to stay in the Catholic Church, that would describe your husband, or refuses to enter the Catholic Church, knowing that it is necessary for salvation, no one can be saved in those two categories. So not only is it a serious sin as such, but also it will lead to damnation if the person dies in that state. So I know you love your husband, and he's the most important person in the world to you, and that's how it should be, and vice versa, I'm quite sure. But my advice would be, rather than, I mean, if it were me, Bernice, you know, and the roles were reversed, and my wife was Protestant and I was Catholic, knowing what I know, if it were me, I wouldn't want to do something that would reinforce her desire to stay out of the Catholic Church. My wife is Catholic. I'm just saying, right, in that scenario.
No, I know.
Yeah.
I mean, my hope is that, of course, I listen to Relevant Radio every morning and I talk to him about it. Mm-hmm. I also, you know, try and play different things for him, and we pray. I mean, I told him, I said, I want my crucifix has to be in the house. We have the Holy Catholic Bible on top of the coffee table. We pray at every meal. So, I mean, we're completely doing Catholic things, and he knows, you know, I pray the rosary every morning when we get up, and I tell him, I said, at 5 o'clock, because I'm on East Coast or West Coast time, if he happens to come home early, I am praying the rosary with Father Rocky. And he kind of, I know you're praying. He says, I'll just sit here. Or if we're in the car, I am saying my prayers. I have
That's
him. Good. So I'm hoping that as I am doing everything that is Catholic for me to sustain my faith, that he will learn that it isn't, that it was, even though somebody can hurt you within the faith, and I get what happened, that it isn't, the faith isn't there because of man. The faith is there because of Christ. And I mean, we've had popes that haven't been amazing. I've had a priest, you know, make advances toward me. And I don't look at that as a bad thing for Catholicism. I think that person and themselves weren't fully indoctrinated into their Catholicism correctly. And so I pray for them. And I can't hope that they feel that way, but it doesn't lessen my faith because somebody else did something wrong within the church. It's the church. My faith in Catholicism isn't about man. It's about the faith that Christ has bestowed upon the priests, and that comes through directly from Christ through the Bishop of Rome. And I can't help but feel that that's true.
Well, you're absolutely right to say, and I endorse what you're saying 100% insofar as your faith is not in the Pope, your faith is not in the parish priest, your faith is not in Patrick Madrid, your faith is in Jesus. And that's where your faith must be, because there's no other reason to be a Catholic than to be a follower of Jesus Christ. And you're absolutely right, Bernice, when you say that just because a member of the Catholic Church does something terrible or mean-spirited, that therefore you walk away from the church. It's a non sequitur. And I've talked about this before. It's probably a good time to bring it up again. It's a non sequitur. Just as it would be a non sequitur to say, oh, look at that cardiologist over there, way overweight, smokes like a chimney, never exercises, eats terrible food. And, you know, look at him. What a hypocrite. You know, he talks a good game about cardiology and health and such, but he, what a slob. So, you know what? I'm not going to take care of my heart because look at him. It's a non sequitur. I mean, you know, why would you, why, just because you have somebody who knows better, who isn't living up to what he knows to be true, it doesn't follow logically that then you would say, well, then I'm going to cut myself off from the sources of health and life. It just doesn't logically follow. So for me, it's always been a great puzzle. I just don't understand. It doesn't compute. Why would somebody say, well, those priest scandals drove me away from the Catholic Church? Why? Why? Because the priest scandals, I don't know if that's the issue that your husband had to deal with, but whatever it may have been, let's say the priest was a jerk, or there was something unjust, or there was a power play, or there was some, whatever it may be, however bad it might have been, all that really shows is Catholics behaving badly and not living up to the ideals that Jesus set for us. So it doesn't logically follow that one would say, well, because that guy failed to live up to the ideals of Jesus, I'm going to walk away from Jesus and the church. And I know your husband feels as though he hasn't walked away from Jesus, but it sounds like he doesn't understand that Jesus didn't establish quote unquote Christianity as such, as like this loose confederation of more or less like-minded Christians who kind of sort of believe most of the same things, but not really. That's not what Jesus established. Jesus established his church. On this rock, I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And that church, I know it's offensive to some, but it's true. That church is the Catholic Church with a capital C. And so the reality here is, to kind of come back to what you were saying, Bernice, I'm so happy to hear that you're doing all these things as a Catholic. It's very edifying, and I want to encourage you and applaud you, because not only are you a wonderful wife and you're thoughtful and devoted, but you're also courageous to stand up for what you know is right. I admire that to the nth degree. My only humble suggestion is simply that however many ways that you can legitimately support your husband and love him and accommodate to whatever extent you can, to go with him to his church is a way of kind of validating or acquiescing to a serious sin that he's involved in by walking away from the Catholic Church. Yes, he was scandalized. I understand. Yes, he probably doesn't really fully understand. So there may be a lessening of his culpability. I understand that too. But if you're going to his church with him every Sunday, it's kind of like you saying, you know what, you know, this is okay. You know, we can make this work. And I think what that does is it reinforces an already bad decision and kind of normalizes it and makes it seem less problematic than it really is. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Yes, it does. Let me ask you, because prior to getting married, I asked him, would you consider going to RCIA? He said, well, what's RCIA? And I said, it's basically, it is, I mean, even though you have been baptized and have received communion and have received your confirmation, it is a reinforcement of the teachings of Catholicism. I said, it's the basics. I said, he moved around a lot when he was young. And so sometimes he went to Catholic schools and sometimes he didn't. And I do think that could have a good effect on him if he could go to the RCIA classes. Now, they haven't. So I didn't know if that would
Let me just say yes with an asterisk, because some parishes, unfortunately, do not have particularly good RCIA programs. Many do. Some do not. And some actually teach a kind of either watered down or radicalized to the left kind of version of the Catholic Church that might turn him off even further. So you have to be careful in determining where there's a good RCIA program. I wish that weren't the case. Now, the Augustine Institute, for what it's worth, they have an RCIA program that is video-based, and it in many parishes...
Really?
Mm-hmm, yeah. It's called Formed. That's one of them. And then there's another one, and the name is escaping me. If you just go to the Augustine Institute's website, you'll be able to locate this. But that might be a resource you could just get and have at home and then have your own private RCIA program, and it's guided and directed with the videos, and I believe it's DVD-based, and then the books and such. So that way, at least you have some quality control, and it won't be overrun with ideology that might creep in some parishes. The other thing, too, and I do have to take a break, Bernice. I'm so glad you called, because this is a very important topic, but I would just like to respectfully suggest that he read the chapter by Tim Staples in the book called Surprised by Truth. And full disclosure, I edited the book, but I'm not trying to sell you a book. You can get a cheapo copy for $1 online. And I'm not looking to benefit in any way. But Tim Staples, who works at Catholic Answers, he's been a friend of mine for a long time.
I've met him.
Okay. So you know that, if you know his background, he was a Pentecostal. He was an on fire for Jesus, Bible-believing Pentecostal guy who thought the Catholic Church was whack. And then when he encountered in the Marine Corps a fellow Marine who was Catholic, who knew his Bible, little by little, Tim tried to argue against him, but eventually he found himself becoming Catholic. And his story, his chapter in that book is called The Bible Made Me Do It. So that may speak to your husband in his language, that he's okay. This dialect that he's learned. I would really encourage, and that book itself, I think, with all the different testimonies of people who are or once were where he is right now, I think he's going to see himself in some of these chapters. And if anything has a shot at getting his attention, I think Tim Staples' story would.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
Thank you so much. I want to be sure that I am not sinning. I hear your music. I'm sorry. Okay, great. Thank you.
No, it's okay. No, this is important, Bernice. I'm really glad you called. I really, really am glad you called. Thank you. I'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Solidarity Healthshare, the first to offer comprehensive sharing for prescription medications. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to CatholicHealthShare.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
All right, a few quick things to get to before we go. First of all, the airline industry is urging the U.S. government to end the mask mandate. The ostensible date for it to end is the 18th of this month. And the Biden administration has yet to decide whether to extend or end the mandate. This is according to CBS News. Roger Dow, who's the president of the U.S. Travel Association, which along with three other industry groups has cited the economic costs as one reason to end the travel mask rules once and for all. He says we need to remove these mandates. Some flyers are fed up. I'm one of them. And this interesting article, it goes into like what are the airline CEOs saying? What are the some of the scientists who study things like, you know, the transmission of disease in enclosed spaces like that? What about that? And how, you know, how do we handle this? So this could be the end of the mask mandate on airlines anyway, within a matter of a week. We'll see. But I have a sneaking suspicion that the diehard mask people are going to push it out further. We'll see what happens there. I'll keep you informed. I do a fair amount of flying, so it affects me directly. But, well, I'll keep you informed. Now, a couple things I want to play a little bit of audio for you. This one here, this is Libs of TikTok, and this is a teacher who's explaining how to use new and different words for non-binary people getting married. So if you thought it was confusing enough, here's an added layer of confusion from Libs of TikTok. Take a listen.
So you or someone you love is non-binary and getting married. And maybe you're asking yourself, like, what's a gender-neutral version for bride or groom? There are a few different answers to this. And anytime I talk about this, it, like, gets controversial. For context, I'm a queer non-binary wedding photographer, so I spend a lot of time at weddings. The oldest and maybe most popular terms, gender-neutral terms for bride and groom, are gride and broom. Just, like, mixing up the spelling of the two words.
Pause it,
but the thing about that is that...
Pause it. Gride and broom. Gride and broom. Which one do you want to be? You want to be the gride or the broom? No comment.
No comment.
Let's listen. Let's keep going.
But the thing about that is that it often just like takes non-binary people and then like puts them into a new binary, where broom is often used as like a masculine bride and gride is often used as like a feminine groom. And if those terms feel great to you, then like go for it. But other alternatives are nearly wed, newlyweds, spouse, and my personal favorite, marrier. So a bride and a groom and the person who are marrying you are all technically marriers, but marrier is like a general term. Okay, you can probably hear my kid like chatting in the background. And you can make up something totally new if you want.
That is the saddest thing about this whole ridiculous video, is that there's a child that is under the authority of this woman. Gride? I mean, I shudder to imagine the kind of upbringing this poor child has. All right, so there's one. Here's a second one. This is a preschool teacher who's explaining about why diversity is so important and what she does in her classroom with regard to the four-year-olds. You'll hear it.
Four-year-olds.
Four-year-olds, yeah.
Hi, my name's Az, and I'm a preschool teacher. So my classroom celebrates diversity. It's probably my favorite thing to teach. We usually use kids' books to talk about this kind of thing. Recently, we started wearing pronoun pins, and the kids get to pick a new pronoun pin every day. We have some that pick, like, she, her every single day, and we have some that change it up. So diversity is really important in my class. So I recently realized that there's a whole lot of really amazing figureheads and people to look up to in this world who aren't white or straight or male or have what have you, and that we should learn a little bit more about these people.
Wait a minute. I thought she said diversity is her favorite thing to teach. I mean, I got the impression she likes diversity, but she just sort of ruled out some people who are in categories that are diverse, and she doesn't like that, I guess. So she's not really in favor of diversity, it sounds like.
I remember kindergarten, and I was learning how to, like, color and tie my shoes.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
was,
you weren't learning about...
fun.
You weren't learning about condoms and sodomy and things like that when you were in preschool?
No,
the good old days.
Yeah.
The good old days.
Yep. Wow.
All right. Now, there's one more, and this is from Guam, of all places. This has to do with female athletics, rugby, to be exact. This is what, about a minute long, Cyrus?
Yeah, I whittled it down to about a minute 20, and what a great example of where this can go.
This is transgender ideology in action right here.
Three teens and high school female rugby athletes were physically injured Saturday by a transgender player from Guam High. In light of the incident, Conrad Kerber, the head coach for both teens and boys and girls rugby teams, is calling out the league to address the concerns.
The aggressive nature that was witnessed clearly showed that it's a definite issue that we have to deal with. I had three players that were injured in that first game against Guam High directly by that particular player. Right now, we just have to come together as a group and discuss the proper path to take, discuss the you know, what the parameters are with allowing transgender males in full contact sports such as rugby.
Although no official decision has been made and while discussions are ongoing, Kerber hopes the league will adopt the World Rugby Law Transgender Guideline, which states that transgender women may not currently play women's rugby because of the size, force, and power-producing advantages conferred by testosterone during puberty and adolescence, and the results in player welfare risk serious injuries.
Body size, body strength, and the ability to apply force with that size and strength completely dominate any girl that I have on my team. It's purely a safety issue when we discuss transgender males playing in female sports at a youth level, particularly at this type of contact sport as well.
Wow, so that's really bigoted of them to say that those trans are different than males, right? Because I mean, that's wrong. Everything they just said was wrong.
But well, from what I've in what that I've world,
heard, right?
Yeah, in that world, they don't care about those differences. I mean, ultimately, they care more about their ridiculous ideology than they do about the safety of people who get hurt, like those girls. Not to mention those who get cheated out of winning swim meets and other sports for women. They can't compete at the same level with men, not because their men are better than them, but because men are bigger and stronger. That's just a fact, whether they like it or not. But you'll notice that the people who are pursuing this agenda, they're far more concerned about getting the agenda to be accepted by everybody. And they don't mind that innocent people wind up getting hurt, sometimes really physically hurt.
Right. We're talking about high school girls getting leveled. I'll share the video. These girls are getting leveled by a dude.
Yeah. Now thank you, Cyrus, for that. I got a tongue-in-cheek email. It must be tongue-in-cheek. And this is from Steven, who says, "Wizard dude Patrick." And that's a first for me. "Seems as though Ketanji Brown Jackson ain't the only person having trouble defining the noun woman. Your conservative brethren apparently had a tough time as well. Check out the Washington Post coverage." And he gives a link to it. Steven. Well, yeah, I had read it the first time around before you wrote to me, but that's okay. The author of the article, Monica Hess, the article is called "Republicans Thought Defining a Woman is Easy, Then They Tried," and they give some examples of, you know, how after the new justice, Brown Jackson, was asked, "Can you define the word woman?" And she said, "I'm not a biologist. I don't know how to define the word woman. I'm not a biologist." I posted this on Twitter. I thought it was a good comeback. If the woman confirmed to the Supreme Court can't confirm what a woman is, why is it so important to confirm a woman? Answer me this. Riddle me this. So my wizard dude response, Stephen, I guess, is you know, this article, it falls into the logical fallacy of faulty analogy. Because the author of this article, what's her name again? Monica Hess. She gives an example of Republican she's a Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. And in there it talks about how, well, she has big muscles. She likes to work out. So she's got well-sculpted biceps. So, gee, I mean, if women are different than men, look at her. She's got biceps. I mean, that's a faulty analogy. It's a logical fallacy. Or to talk about, you know, because women have XX chromosomes, and then to raise the question, what about the issue of some women who have a medical condition in which they don't have a second X chromosome? Again, this is a faulty analogy, because what you're doing is is appealing to these ultimately irrelevant examples of exceptions. It doesn't mean that they're not women. It means that there's something about their physiology that is not typical. It's not normal. It doesn't mean that they cease being women. It doesn't mean that they are now something other than a woman. They're certainly not men.
Like, I'm sorry to break it to you, Chad.
Exactly. So, like, I'm sorry to break it to you, Stephen, but this Washington Post article doesn't make your point. Certainly doesn't make it any stronger. If anything, I think it proves my point. But thank you. I appreciate you making the effort. I'm going to be right back with hour three of our program right after this. I have plenty in store for you, and I'm really looking forward to your phone calls. My number is 888-914-9149. Stay right there. I'll be right back.
Get that in your spirit.